So let's start with the invocation prayers. Namo Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gauratshe Namaha Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगतपते गोपेशा गोपिका कांत राधा कांत नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानु सुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांचा कल्पत्रुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि गौर भक्त वृंदा हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे okay. So what did we discuss last time? Most of you were here, right? Except okay, so last time we discussed about why I need Guru, what are the qualities for a Guru and what are the characteristics for a disciple, right? So we discussed why we need Guru and then what are the bona fide, how to find a bona fide Guru, who is a bona fide Guru, what are the qualities of a bona fide Guru. So, now, as you know, we finished that initial series, which was as a kind of a Bhagavad Gita crash course, right, going over those basic topics. So, my plan, the way I'm planning to cover, is we'll go in a very systematic study of complete Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ramayana. So all those main essential scriptures, to do a systematic study means to go in depth. So Bhagavad Gita study means going chapter by chapter, understanding the flow of Bhagavad Gita and the details. When we ask people Bhagavad Gita, a lot of time people say, yeah, I know Bhagavad Gita. So what do you know about Bhagavad Gita? Oh, it's so karmanyava adhikaraste, that's Bhagavad Gita. So they will quote one shloka, that also 1/4 of a shloka, and they will say, yeah, we know Bhagavad Gita. So Bhagavad Gita is not just about karmanyavadika araste. First of all, if we understand the full shloka, it has much deeper meaning. And it's not just the whole Bhagavad Gita, right? There are 700 shlokas in Bhagavad Gita. There's a lot of knowledge given in Bhagavad Gita. So we will go systematic study of Bhagavad Gita, chapter by chapter, discussing the flow of Gita and how to practically apply Bhagavad Gita in our life. And then same way, Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the most essential scripture. It's the topmost Purana, which is called the Amalam Purana. It's the most ripened fruit of the whole Vedic literature. And then we have the Itihasas, Ramayana and Mahabharata. So, what contains in Ramayana and Mahabharata, it's the whole principles to teach how to conduct our life. It can teach social life, family values, cultural values, religious values, political values, economical values. It can teach everything. Earlier, when the students will go to a school, right, the Guru's ashram, they did not have all these different subjects to teach, science and social studies and English and the language and all these things. The whole teaching will be based on these scriptures, because everything one can learn based on the scripture. It contains everything. One can learn how to do the politics, right? One can learn all that based on those. One can learn the social studies. One can do the... It contains the science also. The Ayurveda and the Vastu and everything. It contains all those knowledge. So there is no need of the extra subjects. Now in the current modern education system, there are a lot of other subjects, but the main essential thing is taken out. That's why we need to have special endeavor to learn those things. Now, how to learn these things? So Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita, evam parampara praptam rajarishyo vidu. This knowledge need to be understood in a disciplic succession. So the knowledge is coming down from the top position. So knowledge always flow down. The modern system is we want to go from down to up, right? We start from the root and then we want to go to the up. So that's the ascending system, which is not the foolproof system to gain knowledge. So the knowledge is always as a descending system. Knowledge flows downward. The today's modern scientific world is we try to go upward, which leads to a lot of erroneous conclusions, erroneous results. Now the knowledge comes down from the top, from the Supreme Lord himself. And the last time we discussed, there are different sampradayas, different paramparas, right? Disciplic succession. So the Lord gave knowledge to Brahmaji. In that chain, knowledge comes down to, in that disciplic succession, Brahma Sampradaya, there is one main prominent acharya was Madhvacharya. And in that same disciplic succession came Madhvendra Puri, Ishwara Puri. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself took initiation just to show to the people externally. He is the Supreme Lord himself, coming as a combined form of Radha and Krishna. He took initiation from Ishwara Puri within this Sampradaya. As we discussed last time also, Lord Krishna, he knows everything. He is the source of all the knowledge. Still, he accepts a guru. Why? Does he need knowledge? Is he under ignorance or what?
To teach people
in general, right? To set an example for others. That when we get a human form of life, the most essential principle is to accept a guru. To gain spiritual knowledge. So he accepted Sandipani Puni. When Lord Ram came, same story, right? Lord Ram came. He accepted Vashishta and then Vishwamitra. Same way when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, he accepted a guru. So that sampradaya is Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Then there is another sampradaya from Lakshmiji. So knowledge was given to Lakshmiji and Lakshmiji passed down that knowledge in that sampradaya, which is known as Sri Sampradaya. Right, more prominent in South India still, in Srirangam, those areas. And who is the prominent Acharya in that Sampradaya? Ramanujacharya. And then Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva passed down that knowledge. In that Sampradaya, the prominent Acharya came Vishnu Swami. And then four Kumaras, the four initial sons of Brahma, which accepted the Nashtik Brahmacharya, that we are not going to marry, we want to stay as Brahmacharis and accept spiritual life. And they are just at the age of 4 or 5 years old. They never grow old. Sanak, Sanatan, Sanandan, four Kumaras. And in that Sampradaya, the knowledge coming down, the main prominent Acharya happened is Nimbarka Acharya. Now if we look all these four prominent Acharya in all the four Sampradayas, happened in the area of around 1000 to 1500, in that time frame. Right now we are in 2017. So all these four prominent Acharya happened between 1000 to 1500 years, like that time frame. So now before we start covering all these scriptures in more systematic study in detail, I want to go over the Guru Parampara. Right? We are receiving knowledge, as I said, we are receiving knowledge in the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Because we come in the succession of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came under Ishwarapuri, Madhvendrapuri, in the link of Madhvacharya. So we will cover, I plan to cover next few weeks, the main prominent personalities within this Sampradaya. Now, if I ask all of you, right, when we were growing up or till now, everybody talk about role model. Oh, who is your role model? If you ask a child, who is your role model? And if I ask you all, what question comes, or what is the picture come in your mind? Who is the role model?
Father.
Your father? It's a very nice answer. If we accept our father as our role model. Mataji, role model. Behind. Okay. So everybody is giving nice answers. I was accepting somebody will say Amitabh Bachchan or Aishwarya Rai or this film star or that sportsman or this politician or that business leader. Right? So that generally in common world, if you ask anybody, who is your role model? People give this kind of crazy answers. Oh, my role model is Shah Rukh Khan, Amitabh Bachchan, Aishwarya Rai, this, that. Now, when we talk about role model, whom to consider as a role model? Somebody becomes famous just from external bodily beauty or something. Is that really a role model? Right, if you ask youngsters, I'm not talking about any, just my mental speculation. Most of the time, if you ask youngster, what they say, role model? These Bollywood, Hollywood stars or the sports person, these are generally the role model. Are they really the role model? People consider, okay, this particular film star is my role model. And what does he do? He or she? All nonsense things, basically. He may be smoking. He may have a bad temper. Right? Beating up maybe a reporter or somebody. So things like that. So when we talk about role model, whom to consider a role model? Whom to consider our role model? From whom we can learn the values?
Teacher can be role model, who can lead you.
Teacher can role model, so who can teach us, right? Teach us not...
Right direction.
Right direction, not how to become a CEO of a company, but how to get the real values, how to get the real purpose of life, how to fulfill that, right? So that is role model in real sense, like our parents who show us the direction, who put us into the right frame of mind. Now, a lot of time we start considering all these scientists and all those. If somebody is in a science field, we start considering some great scientist as our role model. If somebody is in a business field, they look up to some great business people, right? Who are as an example for them. If somebody is into sports, for them, some great sportsman that becomes a role model. Now, when we want to progress in spiritual life, when we want to understand spiritual life, so our role model should be the previous acharyas who have done tremendous work to give these teachings to the humanity. In the favor of the humanity, who have served all their life, right? Who have given up all their life just for this purpose. So we'll go over some prominent personalities within this sampradaya, just to understand what is their bhava, what all different people came from, what kind of background, how they accepted the spiritual life, and what kind of things they did as a example, setting an example. So we'll start with in Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. So first personality comes, of course, Madhvacharya. Right? So we'll spark today. I will try to speak a little bit on Shripad Madhvacharya. Now, everybody is familiar about little bit about Madhvacharya. She is familiar. She knows everything. Anybody knows little bit about Madhvacharya? Have heard the name at least, or just heard today, or last week? Okay. So, Shripad Madhvacharya appeared around 1200 area, right? That time I exactly 1238. So his life background, his parents, they were living in the Karnataka state near Udipi. Everybody is familiar about Udipi. So they lived in the area of Udipi. In the Udipi, there is a place called Parshukshetra, where Lord Parshuram had done a lot of austerity. So Parshukshetra, close to that is Udipi. And then close to Udipi, there is another place called Padukkakshetra. So that is the village where this Brahmana lived, named Narayan Bhatt. Narayan Bhatt and his wife Vedavati. Now this person, even though he had earlier two sons and one daughter, his two sons died at a very early age because of a disease. And he was always desiring to get another son to continue to his purpose of life, kind of doing that worship. So he was strongly desiring to get another son. And he and his wife, they will walk 15 kilometers to go to Ananta Nagar, Ananta Kshetra, where the Ananteshwara temple is there. So they will walk 15 kilometers to go to that temple every day, and full day they will do a lot of service, serve the Lord. And no food practically, just milk. Can you imagine? So they did this for how long? For 12 years. For 12 years they did this kind of austerity. Every day going 15 kilometers, going to the temple, serving whole day, and practically staying only on milk. And then Lord, out of his love for this Brahmana, he blessed them. So Vedavati conceived a child. So this boy was born on the day of Vijayadashmi in 1238. Now Vijayadashmi, what is Vijayadashmi? At least everybody should know Vijayadashmi, right? Right, so Lord Ram killing Ravana, that is Vijayadashmi. So Madhvacharya, this boy, little boy, was born on the day of Vijayadashmi on 1238. And they named him Vasudev. Now this boy, before this boy, little background story, let me tell you a little background story. So that time, before Madhvacharya appeared, or even Ramanujacharya also appeared little before Madhvacharya, right, in same around 1100 time frame. So before that, there was Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya preached a lot of Advaita philosophy, oneness. So there is no difference in the soul and the super soul, everybody is God. So he preached that kind of philosophy to bewilder the people in general. So all the devatas, so basically the worship of the Lord, everything was stopped, and it was everybody thinking, oh, there is no difference in God, and oh, there's God has no form. Everybody is just impersonal Brahman, and Jiva is also can become God. So that philosophy was preached, no worship was going on. So all the devatas approached Lord Vishnu that, oh, this whole concoction is going on and should do something. So Lord said, I don't have any scheduled incarnation right now. So my incarnation will come now at the end of Kali Yuga, at a Kalki avatar. So I will plan for somebody to go and fix the situation. So in the assembly of all the devatas, Lord Vishnu gazed at Vayudev. And he smiled and said, Vayudev, why don't you do this task? Why don't you take up this service? So Vayudev accepted. Now Vayudev's Ansh, that's how Vayudev entered into the womb of Vedavati. So this boy, Vasudev, is considered as an expansion of Vayudev. So Vayudev appeared earlier also, right? Which avatar or which expansion? Hanuman, right? Lord Hanuman. So that is also Vayudev's expansion or combination of Vayudev and Lord Shiva's. Lord Shiva's Ansh through Vayudev. So that is also expansion of Vayudev. And then after that, he appeared as Bhima. Bhima is what? Vayuputra, right? So Bhima also is son of Vayudev or Ansh of Vayudev. And now this is the third time. So he appeared as this boy, Vasudev. Now, from the very childhood, this boy did like miraculous activities. So I will go over very few basic pastimes what this boy did. So when a boy little grows up, there is an Ann Prasher ceremony. When they feed first time the grain. So before that also, like when this boy was born, now it was predicted that he will have a very voracious appetite, like Bhima. Right? Bhima also had a voracious appetite. He could eat a lot. And he had immense strength, bodily strength. So this boy was also predicted same way, that he will have immense bodily strength and eating capacity, and he will devastate all these impersonal scholars. So when this boy was very young, few months, his mother is feeding, nursing him, and as soon as she will go, every 15 minutes he will start crying, hungry again. So she is like constantly feeding. As he grew up little bit, 6 months, 9 months. So one day she had to go out of the house for some work. And she told her daughter that I'm going, I have to go, and you take care of this little baby, your brother. Now this girl was taking care of this little Vasudev. And as soon as the mother left, this boy started crying, I'm hungry. So and this girl, his sister, is thinking, now what can I do? How can I feed him? What can I feed him? And she is trying to do everything. She is just trying to sing songs for him, do something, and he is not stopping. He is crying and crying and crying. So that time there was big packet, or what you call as bori, anaj ki bori hoti hai na, usko kya bolte hai? Like the feed to the animals, all those
grass.
Not the grass. Actually, it was the grain. It was the right. So she put a hole in that and few grains fell into the boy's mouth. A few month old boy. Okay, just imagine 6 month, 9 month old boy. Few grains fell into that and he chewed, swallowed all that. And he became quiet for some time. The girl went. So now the boy is okay. Let me go and play something. So when the mother came, after a few hours, mother came back and she is trying to find where is this little Vasudev. He is not on his jhula. where this boy go? And she is searching and searching. Then the sound came inside from that bori. He went inside that and he ate 40 kg of that grain. So that was his appetite, just few months old, and that was his Ann Prasher ceremony. First time eating grain, he ate 40 kg of the grain. So just from the childhood, he started exhibiting his wonderful pastimes. Now, few other pastimes, when he was grown up, few years old, his father was very poor, just a Brahmana, and he had taken some loan from a lender in the village. Now this lender came at his house that pay my loan today. Until you pay me, I will not leave your house. I will stay at your chokhat. I will not leave your door front until you pay me. I am doing a hunger strike. So now this is Vasudev's father, Narayan Bhatt. He thought, oh, he is my guest. And if he doesn't eat, I cannot also not eat. Right? That was the tradition. So if you don't feed your guest, until you feed your guest, one is not supposed to eat. So he said, he is my guest and he is on hunger strike. He is not going to eat. So how can I eat? So in the meantime, this little Vasudev came to call his father. Father, come. Please come to have prasad. He said, I cannot eat. Why you cannot eat? Oh, this guest is there at the door front and he doesn't want to leave. I have to pay him something. Until I pay, he is not going to leave. So this boy said, oh, you need to pay him some money. So he went to that person. Oh, you need some money? Come with me to the backyard. So he took him to the backyard. In the backyard, there was a tamarind tree. So he, from the tamarind tree, he got some tamarind, took the seeds out, and he said, okay, you want some money? Here, take this. And this boy, this man, oh, you are paying me some tamarind seeds? What is this? No, no, take this. So he took his hand and he put the little Vasudev put the tamarind seeds on the hand, and as soon as he put there, it became gold coins. And it was like a lot more than what he was expecting, or basically what was his loan. So Vasudev, this man left, he was happy that I got my money. He left, Vasudev came back, that person's debt is settled, don't worry, now come inside. And then, so as again he was growing up, that there was close to, little far from their house, like kids will go play outside in the neighborhood, right? He was gone for playing, and there was one demon who came in the form of a serpent, Manimar. And again, this demon has a pastime from the time of Bhima. Bhima had killed that demon, and that demon appeared again, and he assumed the form of a serpent to kill this little Vasudev. So he came to attack Vasudev, and he just put his left foot thumb on the snake and crushed him inside the stone. With his pressure, he put him inside the stone and just killed that demon. So that, just displaying the strength of Bhima as a little baby. And they say this particular stone where that snake's prints are there on the stone is still there in that place. And same the tamarind tree, which I mentioned, right? The tamarind tree also still there in the backyard of that house. Now from that time, when he killed this demon, he was away from the house for some time, playing, and his mother was now looking for him. Where is my son Vasudev? She was calling out, Vasudev, come home. So from that same place, he just took one leap and he stood in front of his mother. So just jumped once from that place and he appeared in front of his mother. So Charase, within this one pastime, he displayed two qualities. Both the pastime of Bhima and Hanuman. So with the killing of this demon, he showed the strength of Bhima. Right? Just pushed him with the toe of his foot and killed the demon. And then he took one leap like Lord Hanuman and he stood in front of his house. So this child, as he was growing up, he was very scholarly from the beginning, like 5 years old. And in the debate, he can defeat many, many big, big scholars. Even his teachers and all, he can easily, in the argument, he will defeat them. So he will go to his teacher's house, like in the ashram to study, and very playful. In the childhood, he was very playful, just playing. His teacher will call, oh, you are not coming to the class anytime. You are always playing or eating. So there is another pastime. He will get hungry every half an hour. Every half an hour from his ashrams, he will go to his home, eat and come back. Again, half an hour, he will go back, come and eat and come back. So his teacher said, either you are eating or playing. You never come to class for study. How will you learn? How will you learn the scripture? How will you learn all this? He said, oh, I already know everything. How do you know? Oh, I know from my past life. He said, oh, is that it? So, yeah, if you want, you can take my test. So he'll tell his teacher, take my test. And sometimes they will test him. And he will answer everything. Whatever they have not even taught till so far, he will answer those also. And then as he grew up, he made up his mind that my purpose, life purpose, for him his life purpose was very clear. I want to establish the supremacy of the Lord. And I want to surrender my life to the service of the Lord. From the age of 8, he started talking about taking sannyas. Just imagine, 8-year-old child, he even doesn't know anything. 8-year-old child will be in which grade? From current standard, maybe second or third grade. So from that age itself, he started talking about taking sannyas. And his father will become very scared. Oh, he is just 8 years old and he is talking about taking sannyas. And we had him after so much of austerity, and he will also leave us. What will happen to us? So they will try to convince him, no, you cannot take sannyas. You need to study, stay with us. Who will take care of us? So they will try to emotionally, kind of emotional blackmail, right? So, but he internally, inside his mind, he was very clear that one day I will take sannyas, go away. So at many occasions, he will do that. Once his father saw him taking one white sheet, cutting it into two pieces, tying one and putting another on his shoulder. And that also his father understood, oh, this boy's symptoms of taking sannyas. This boy will not stay for longer. And they sent him actually to the ashram of, let me see if I have here, Achyutta Preksha. So he was going to the ashram of Achyutta Prakesha for study. And in that ashram also, when he was studying, he will exhibit a lot of scholarly symptoms. He will defeat everybody in argument, even his teacher. Achyutta Prakesha, he will defeat him. Achyutta Prakesha also was under the influence of Mayavadi philosophy from Shankaracharya. His guru, originally he was a Vaishnava, but under the pressure of Shankaracharya's students, he was converted into Advaita philosophy. So he was also a little under Advaita philosophy influence. So this Vasudev will sometime defeat his own guru also. Guru in the sense as a teacher, he's not had accepted guru in terms of taking initiation or diksha from him. So his father will come to Achyutta Prakesha sometime, that, oh, please teach this child. He wants to always talking about taking sannyas. Please instruct him not to leave me. He said, okay, I will try to teach him, but maybe he will not listen to me also. He is so strong in his conceptions. So one day, again with the desire of taking sannyas, this Vasudev came to his father. So his father, I want to take sannyas. Please give me permission. And this Vasudev was holding a dry stick in his hand. So his father jokingly said, if this stick can become a tree, then you can take sannyas. His father was saying, this is a dry stick. How dry stick can become a tree? So he said, if this stick become a tree, then you can take sannyas. So this boy, he went outside. He put the stick into the ground, like planting, right? Planting a plant. He put that stick in the ground, and immediately that stick become a big tree. So showing, okay, now I fulfilled your promise. Now you will give me permission to take sannyas. So his father again started kind of emotion, where, no, we will be alone. How can you take sannyas? How can you leave us alone? So he said, if we get another son, then you can take sannyas. Because then we will have somebody else to take care of us. If we get another son, then you can take sannyas. So he said, okay. So with the arrangement of Lord, this Brahman, Narayan Bhatt, they got another son. Now this Vasudev again, okay, now your desire is fulfilled. You got another son. Now you will let me go. Now you will let me take sannyas. No, how can you take sannyas? You are such a old, young boy, just 10 years, 12 years old. So Vasudev said, they will never allow me to take sannyas. So one day he was taking bath in the river, and he made a kind of a imagination thing, that my feet is in the mouth of a crocodile. This crocodile will drag me inside the river. So he's asked his father, you allow me to take sannyas or this crocodile will eat me? If you will let me eat sannyas, then this crocodile will leave me. So his father said, so if you let me take sannyas, at least you will be able to see me sometimes. But if you don't let me take sannyas, this crocodile will eat me. You will never see me again. So his father thought, okay, at least better he stays alive and takes sannyas, we will be able to see him sometimes at least. So his father said, okay, if you take sannyas, we are okay if you take sannyas. If so, then the whole imagination this disappeared. This boy came back, came out of the river. He said, okay, now I am free to take sannyas. So at the age of 12, just at the age of 12, this boy Vasudev, he took sannyas. So from his took sannyas through Achyutya Prakesha. So he is his sannyas guru. And he gave him the name Purna Pragya. That time, at the time of sannyas. So this Vasudev's name is changed to Purna Pragya. But now, he was free to travel and preach. That was his life mission. Right? To preach and destroy or devastate the impersonal philosophy of Shankaracharya. So when we say impersonal philosophy, what does that mean? As I already mentioned a little bit, impersonal philosophy means the Lord has no form. He is just some energy. He is just Brahman. And we all are Brahman. We are all equal. Jiva and the Lord, there is complete oneness. So that is called Advaita. Okay, Advaita means there is no duality. This is just one. Everything is one. God is same, we are same, we are all God. It's just that we are in Maya, and when we come out of Maya, we realize that we are God. So that is Advaita philosophy. So Shankaracharya preached that philosophy. He traveled all over India and propounded this philosophy. And his life mission, Madhvacharya's life mission, was to destroy this philosophy and establish the philosophy of Dvaita, duality. There is always difference in the Jiva and the Paramatma. Jiva can never become Ishwara. Yeah.
I mean, I have one book from Shankaracharya's in philosophy that after the Buddha came in thing, then because Buddha has a different total. Different
right. So Buddha's philosophy was voidism, shunyavad.
Right.
Okay, everything is void. There is no God, nothing, everything is void, it's all temporary. And Buddha diverted people from the Vedic path. Don't look into the Vedas, don't accept the Vedas, just listen to what I am saying. Because people were misutilizing the Vedas and doing whimsical activities of animal slaughtering, and Brahmanas was establishing themselves as the most superior authority. That, oh, if you get Brahmanas blessings, everything is okay. You don't have to worry about anything. No karma, nothing. Just take Brahmana's blessing. So they were trying to establish their superiority by putting fear in people's hearts. And people were misutilizing Vedas. On the name of Vedas, they were doing a lot of wrong sacrifices. Even sacrificing the animals and all.
So Shankaracharya was one, he said, like, Kanyakumari to Kashmir. He said he built a lot of temple. He traveled himself to like make south versus north combined, like, because in north lot of people pray only Bhagavan Ram and Krishna, and in south it is always Shiva and Ganesh. So Shankaracharya make like some arrangement somehow. I mean, there are a lot of examples in the book. I think it is in Sindhi, I read.
Okay.
So they
I have never heard of Shankaracharya establishing temples.
Yeah, Shankaracharya make them like, you know.
So Shankaracharya, that's why Shankaracharya's philosophy was everything is same. Okay, you don't need to worship all these different things. It's everything same. Everything is Brahman. So he wanted to bring the Advaita. That's what oneness. That, oh, somebody is worshipping Shiva, somebody is worshipping Vishnu or Ganesh, or say everything is one. We are also same Brahman, and we will realize it. So his philosophy was Advaita philosophy as complete oneness.
But somehow I think, I mean, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought Shankaracharya's effort basically make the Hindu Dharma, make like people were going as a Buddhist. So
yes. Right, exactly. That part is correct.
Yeah.
So people were rejecting everything now.
Right.
Okay, coming completely going away from the Vedic path.
Right.
So he was, Buddha has preached Shunyavad philosophy.
Right.
So Shankaracharya came to drive out them from the boundary of India. So he drove people, Buddhist and everything, out. And he again established the authority of the Vedas. But he preached only Advaita philosophy. As a oneness, Brahman. he did not bring it, the whole teaching, to its fullness back. So like we do this prayer, right? When we do this prayer, Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane. What is the next part? Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavad Paschatya Deshatarine. So driving out the philosophy of Shunyavad and Nirvishesha. So both these philosophies are wrong in one sense. So Buddhists, they preach the philosophy of Shunyavad. Shankaracharya preach the philosophy of Nirvishesha. So lot of other great acharyas in Vaishnavism, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, they struggled hard, they fought strongly to drive away that philosophy also. So there is, everything has a purpose. Buddhist, when Lord Buddha came, he is also incarnation of Lord. But he did this thing, he had a purpose to stop all this nonsense which was happening on the name of the Vedas. So that's why he took a detour. So Shankaracharya brought it a little back, right? He drove the people who were following wrong things, he drove them out and he brought again back to the Vedic tradition, but not fully. Then Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, these great acharyas came to bring it further back. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, who completely brought it back to the Dvaita philosophy, Achintya Bheda Bhed. We can go into the whole this discussion for hours and hours. So Madhvacharya, he started preaching widely now. He was free to travel.
Here Shankaracharya is the incarnation of Lord Shiva. Okay. And why he thought like Shiva, definitely know Krishna is the supreme Lord. Okay. After coming Shiva, why he thought Advaita, not like now you are saying Madhvacharya.
So said, not, whenever Lord comes or even he sends his representative, there is a purpose, particular time, place, circumstance, the teaching is given according to that. Even the Bhagavatam says, Lord Vishnu, in one discussion with Parvati, he says, at this particular time, I will come as Shankaracharya and I will preach this Nirvishesha philosophy to the people, to bewilder the demonic people, okay, to drive away these people. So there is a purpose for everything.
That's what, why they did not teach, like now you are saying, Madhvacharya, what they are teaching, Dvaita.
Right, so
why did not that time they teach that one?
Again, the time, place and circumstance. Based on the tendency of people, if I tell you, okay, you climb to the mountain. If you tell a lame person, you climb a mountain, will he be able to do that? If you tell him, okay, you only do this much, take one step. That will be easier for him, right? So based on the capacity of the people or the consciousness of people that time, he showed him a limited path. He at least brought them back to the Vedic culture back. Buddha had completely diverted from Vedic path, reject the Vedas completely. So he also had a purpose. He himself is Lord Krishna, but he had a purpose. So he completely rejected the Vedas. Then Shankaracharya came, he brought people back to the Vedic path, but not fully establishing the complete philosophy as the supremacy of the Lord, but telling that accept the Vedic path, Brahmasmi, right? Everybody is Brahman. So he preached that philosophy. Then he left the work for next people. That's why he sent his representative that you go and complete this task. The same way when Prabhupada came. Okay, Prabhupada was asked by his one of his disciples, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was himself God, why he did not preach the holy name throughout the world? Why he preached only to India, not to the overall world? He was God himself. And Prabhupada said, because he left this for us to do. Because he wanted us to do this. He wanted us to utilize. So, what he was trying to say is, Lord has given us this responsibility. He has chosen us to do this task. It's not, if I do or not do it, it doesn't matter. Somebody will do. Okay, so another one instance was when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati also, right? He also preached vigorously throughout India. Prabhupada's guru. So his disciple, when Srila Bhakti Siddhanta disappeared, one of his disciple asked that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prophecy is that my holy name will be distributed throughout the world. Every town and village, this holy name will be sung. So who will complete this task? Who will fulfill this prophecy? So Prabhupada said, one day one fool will do this. So he was taking a very humble position, that one day one fool will accomplish this task, will fulfill this prophecy. So Lord sends his representative, right? He not necessarily that he will do the task and go away. He chooses people, assigns people. He empowers people to do that task. So again, coming back to Madhvacharya now. So Madhvacharya, he started traveling throughout India. So after Shankaracharya, even Ramanujacharya did not travel so vigorously throughout India. His travel and preaching was also more centered in the South India. So Madhvacharya, after Shankaracharya, was the first person to travel throughout India debating and defeating that philosophy on the conclusion based on the scripture, not his personal conclusion or something, with the strength of the scripture. He will quote from the scriptures, from all these Vedas and Upanishads and Puranas, he will quote all these and establish the supremacy of the Lord. That the Jivatma can never be Supreme Lord. There is always difference in the Jivatma and Paramatma. So he defeated big scholars, and a lot of time people will surrender. He will defeat easily in argument. So a lot of time people started becoming scared. Now Madhvacharya was not doing to gain fame. One point to understand. His purpose was very clear. To establish the supremacy of the Lord. Not to gain his popularity. Because in the history there are many other scholars happened who also did the same thing. He will go and challenge other scholars and defeat them. But their purpose was to gain fame. So at the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was just a little boy, Nimai Pandit, there was a big scholar, Kashmiri Pandit, Keshava Kashmiri. And he was going everywhere challenging other scholars, and he will defeat them. And he was doing this to gain his popularity. But Madhvacharya defeated all other people who was the propounding of Advaita philosophy to establish the supremacy of the Lord. So in that way he did a lot of preaching, but he will not be very harsh or anything. He will convey his masses very humbly, with very humble state of mind. Now this seeing his popularity, like Purna Pragya. That time it's still not Madhva, it's Purna Pragya, known by the name Purna Pragya. So seeing his popularity, his sannyas guru, in which ashram he was staying, at the ashram of Achyutya Prakesha. So he made him the next Acharya. So becoming so happy with his popularity and all, he said, okay, I will appoint him as the next leader of the Matha, next Acharya. And he established him the next Acharya and gave him the name Ananda Tirtha. Okay, Ananda means which is bliss, and Tirtha means, so in one meaning is holy place, right? Tirtha. Another meaning of Tirtha is full of knowledge also. So Ananda Tirtha was blissful and full of knowledge. So he gave him that name. And Madhava also has same meaning. So there is difference in Madhava and Madhava. Madhava is the name of Lord Krishna, right? And his name was Madhava. So people gave him the name with love. He started calling him Madhava. That's how his name became Madhava Acharya. So Achyutya Prakosha appointed him as a leader of the mutt of the ashram. And he was traveling vigorously, defeating everybody. Now, lot of time when they traveled, they went through a lot of other places. One time they were traveling through one area. In that place there was a king. He was very kind of a egoistic person. He will dig wells and everything. to gain popularity, right? So I'm doing so much of this digging well and lakes and all, and whoever is passing by, he will make them do the work. That you guys come and help this, then we will allow you to pass from this area. So Madhvacharya, along with some of his disciples, was once passing through that area. His king soldiers stopped them. You cannot pass. You have to dig this well. When it is done, then you can continue with your journey. And Madhvacharya said, no, we cannot dig this well. So he said, why don't the king come? And he is such a great king. Why don't he show how to dig the well? If he shows us properly how to dig the well, we will learn. And then we can do it properly. Otherwise, we will make mistake. So he influenced him so that the king came and he started digging the well. And he was so influenced, he kept digging and digging. He himself was occupied in digging the well, and everybody passed by. Everybody left the place and went. Another occasion, they were passing from one river area. That time, a lot of places in India were under the Muslim rule also, right? A lot of Muslim rulers were there. So one town was under the Muslim, some Jalaluddin, something I guess, person was there, some Qaji. So there was a river. On one side the Hindus were living, on the another side it was under the control of the Muslim. And there was so much of the tension between them, nobody was allowed to cross the river. But they wanted to go on the other side, so they had to travel. So even though there was a lot of tension, Madhvacharya along with his disciple, he went into the river, swimmed across the river and went to the other side. And the soldiers of that Qaji, they captured all these Madhvacharya and all the people traveling with him. They took him to the Qaji. Now Qaji said, you are not afraid of us. We have never allowed to cross anybody to come in this area. How come you are traveling in this? And so Madhvacharya was very fluent in many languages. He was very fluent in Persian and Turkish and all these languages. So he started talking with the Qaji in Persian language, his language. And he started an interfaith talk. So started preaching their interfaith talk. God is one and same God which you worship. So he completely convinced that person, mesmerized that person. And he got so much respect from Madhvacharya. So he wanted to give him land and a lot of other facilities that you stay here. So Madhvacharya rejected everything. Now we need to go continue with our travel. So traveled vigorously talking to the people. Traveled to the North India, South India, everywhere. Once he was in the South India, Kanyakumari. There he met with a lot of debate and argument and criticism actually. They said, if you are defeating our philosophy, if the followers of Shankaracharya, they told, if you are defeating our philosophy, if you don't accept this, then you should show your commentary on the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Why don't you write your commentary then? If you don't accept our master's commentary, why don't you write your own commentary? So Madhvacharya at that time took this as a goal of his life, that I will write my commentary on the Dvaita philosophy. But he said, I want to take the blessings of the original author. Who is the original author? Vyasadev. When was Vyasadev? 5000 years back. And Madhvacharya is 1200 now, right? After almost 4000 years later. So Madhvacharya said, I want to take the blessings of Vyasadev, the original author of all the scriptures. So Vyasadev actually to date also still resides in the caves of Himalaya in Badrikashram. There is the original place, right, where Vyasadev's ashram was. That place is called Badrikashram, next to Badrinath. If you go to, people go to Badrinath, next to that is Badrikashram, is there still. But Vyasadev is still living there, but not visible to the mortal people. There are a lot of personalities which are known as Chiranjeevis. So Vyasadev is one of the Chiranjeevi, like Hanuman, right? Hanuman is Chiranjeevi. He is still around here, but we cannot see. Then Ashwatthama, right? Ashwatthama was Chiranjeevi. So like that, there are personalities. So Vyasadev was still there. So Madhvacharya said, I want to go and meet Vyasadev personally, take his blessings and then I will compile my commentary on the Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. So he started traveling to the Himalayas, from Kanyakumari to all the way opposite side, North India. So he traveled for months and months with a few of his disciples. They arrived in the Badrinath area, and after that they continued to the Badrikashram. So only one of his disciples traveled with him. Nobody else was able to continue on this whole mountain area. And after passing some distance, even that disciple, he got so fatigued. So Madhvacharya said, you stay here, I will go alone. You wait with other disciple, you wait here. So Madhvacharya left that disciple there and he went alone. And he jumped from one mountain peak to another mountain peak, and in few short time he reached at that place. So he reached at that place. At that place is called Adibadri. So in the course of Himalayan mountain after Badrikashram, so there is a place called Adibadri. So in that, in one cave, Vyasadev still lives. So he finally arrived there, he took darshan of Vyasadev and he showed him his commentary that I am compiling this, I want your blessings. So Vyasadev gave his blessings. Vyasadev actually initiated him. So he gave him initiation, diksha, and he instructed him. Then Madhvacharya, staying there, he wrote his commentary on Bhagavad Gita. And after that he did whole commentary on the Bhagavatam also. So that's why in the Vyasadeva, this Brahma Sampradaya, right? We say Brahma gave knowledge to Narada, Narada gave to Vyasadeva, Vyasadeva personally gave it to Madhvacharya. So that's how this disciplic succession come down. So then finally he gave all that, and he came back with his disciple. He met his disciple back and he again traveled back the journey. Now he had his authorized commentary also established on the philosophy of Dvaita philosophy, which is dualism. So there is duality between the Lord and the Jiva, two different entities. Now, there's another very wonderful pastime of Madhvacharya. So everybody said they know ODP. Right? In Udipi there is a very famous temple, Udipi Krishna temple. So anybody knows the history of that? So Madhvacharya established that deity.
Yeah.
So the history goes like this, the pastime goes like this. So once Madhvacharya's original town, right, where he was staying. So that is the whole Udipi town basically, is on the seashore. Right?
Close to.
So from Udipi, his ashram where he was staying, so very close, like 4 kilometers. So it says his ashram was like around 4 kilometers from the beach, from the sea area. So Madhvacharya once went to take bath in the ocean, in the sea. And as he was taking bath at the seashore, in the far he saw one boat stuck in the bad weather. Like as a heavy wind and all that, one boat was stuck in that, and it was not able to come out of that storm. So Madhvacharya, he took his chadar and he started waving, and with his waves, the wind direction changed. So again, he is Ansha of Vayudev, right? He himself is Ansha of Vayudev. So he changed the direction of the wind by waving on that. So the boat, and then he indicated same to the boat. So boat started coming to the ocean, to the seashore. So as the boat came down, so the captain of the ship, he came down and said, oh, this boat was badly stuck in that storm. I don't know what you did and how it came out. I'm very thankful to you. And I want to give you some gift. So you can take anything you want from my ship. He said, I'm a renounced person. What do I care for all these things? So then Madhvacharya saw some big kind of a lumps, like stones of clay on the ship, which they were using as a ballast to balance some weight on that. He said, oh, you are coming from Dwarka. And Dwarka, there is a place which is very famous for Gopi Chandan. Okay, so you can give me this big shilas of Gopi Chandan, you can give me that as a to use as a tilak. So he gave one big that shila of clay from that. And as they were taking it down from the boat, it fell down and broke. And from that, this deity came. From inside of that, this little Krishna deity appeared. Now, this deity also had a history. What deity was that? It says when Lord Krishna was staying in Dwarka, once Mother Devaki came to Krishna that I never saw your childhood pastimes. I missed your childhood pastimes. I was in the prison house of Kansa and you were growing up in Gokul. I missed all your childhood pranks and all that. I want to see your that baby form, stealing the butter and from Mother Yashoda. So Krishna, even though he was married, lot of queens, right? Rukmini and everybody was there. So just to satisfy his mother, Krishna transformed himself into baby Krishna, showing the form of holding in one hand the grinding rod, the churning rod, and with one hand the rope, right, holding the rope. So he showed that form. And Rukmini also saw that form. So happened to see. So later on Rukmini said, even though you are my husband, it's hard for me to conceive you as a baby, right? For a wife to see her husband as a little baby, it's a little kind of weird situation. So, but I very much want to worship you in that form. So then Krishna created himself, his deity in that form, as a little, this tall Krishna deity. Same Krishna with one hand holding the churning stick and in one hand with the rope and butter. So he made that form. So this is what picture you see here. So Krishna, little Bal Krishna, one hand churning stick and another hand the rope, churning rod. So he himself created that deity and gave it to Rukmini. So Rukmini used to worship that deity form. And later on when Lord bound up all his pastimes, at the end the Dwarka was sinking down and Arjuna came, right? Krishna called Arjuna to take all the queens to Hastinapur. So that time they put the deity inside that big pond, which was called as a Gopitila. So they put the deity, hid the deity of this Bal Krishna in that area. And it was sunk down. Later on, they were taking big blocks of sand from that. And this was hidden in that. So when they brought this big mountain of sand, it broke down and this deity appeared in front of Madhvacharya. So Madhvacharya said, I will install this deity in Udipi. So lot of people try to lift the deity to carry it. There's even 35 people could not lift that deity. So Madhvacharya easily himself lifted the deity and carried all the way back. 4 kilometers he walked back with the deity. He came and he established a temple there. He did not construct a very huge temple. He wanted to establish a very simple, keep the worship simple. So he established a temple there. So now his preaching activities further continued. So I'm summarizing is in a very nutshell, small descriptions here, not going into all various details. So he preached vigorously, defeating big scholars, converting them back to Vaishnavism. Even his teacher originally who gave him sannyas on his ashram he was studying, even he defeated him also, converted him fully back to Vaishnavism, Vaishnava Siddhanta. He became the role changed. Earlier he was the teacher and Madhvacharya was the disciple. So the role changed. He became his disciple, Madhvacharya's disciple. Even in the Ramanujacharya case also it happened once. Right? Who was his teacher? He later on he became his disciple, Ramanujacharya. So Madhvacharya case also same thing happened. Now, how Madhvacharya disappeared, that's also a very glorious way of his disappearance from this world. It said he used to sit on his ashram on a mountain slab and he used to give class to the disciples or all the people there. So one day he was speaking on the Aitreya Upanishad. He was giving a discourse on the Aitreya Upanishad. And while speaking, he just disappeared from that place. In front of all the people, he just disappeared from that place. He was wearing a garland and his stick, I believe. So it just fell there on the mountain there on which he was sitting, and he just disappeared from that. And it said he united back with Vyasadeva. From that place he became invisible, and he went back and met Vyasadeva there. And he is still living there to date with Vyasadeva. And he is also considered as one of the Chiranjeevis, who is still present there, staying there with Vyasadeva. Now, let's just discuss few teachings, or what was his key points of his philosophy, which he preached. So when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, so even though he came under the same parampara, right, Madhvacharya, Madhvendrapuri, Ishwarapuri, but he kind of synchronized all the four sampradayas. He took two points from all four sampradayas, two core teachings, and made as a core essential teachings of the Gaudiya Sampradaya, which is part of the Madhvacharya, Madhva Sampradaya. So the two teachings which Lord Chaitanya took from Madhvacharya's teachings, one was worship of Lord Krishna is the supreme. Okay, as doing the deity worship of Lord Krishna, establishing the deity worship. So that was one. And second one was vigorously defeating, fighting against the impersonal philosophy, Mayavad philosophy. So these are the two principles which he took from Madhvacharya. So Madhvacharya's main essential teachings. So number one, Lord Vishnu is the absolute truth. He is the supreme personality of Godhead, absolute truth. Nothing is higher than him. So that was, he established that as a supremacy. He established the supremacy of the Lord. So the Lord is known by the study of the Vedas. So we can completely understand the Supreme Lord with the systematic study of the Vedic scripture. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvasya chaham hridesha nivishto matta smritir gyanam apohanam cha Vedesha sarve rahameva vedyo Vedanta krit veda evidev chaham. I am the compiler of all the Vedas, and I am to be known through the Vedas. So the Supreme Lord can be understood in its complete essence with the proper study of the scriptures. So the Advaita philosophy preaches this material world is false. It's just Maya. But he established the principle, this material world is not false, but it's temporary. Right? It is real. It's not imagination. It's real, but it's temporary. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So again, based on the strength of the scriptures, by just quoting from the scriptures. So in scripture, Krishna says that this material world, dukkhalya shashvatam, this material world is full of misery and it is temporary. So Krishna doesn't say this material world is all illusion, it's all false. This world is real, but it's temporary. Don't try to get fully settled in this one. Don't try to think this as a permanent place. Neither it is a false imagination. It is real, but it's temporary. The jiva, the living entity, is different from the Lord. It's a bimba pratibimba. So it's the reflection of the Supreme Lord. It's the particle of the Supreme Lord. It's different from the Lord. The next one, jiva by nature. Jiva's position is to serve the Supreme Lord. Jiva can never become equal to God. We cannot say, oh, one day I will become God. That is Mayavad philosophy. That one day I will become God. Right now I am in illusion. Right now I am covered with Maya. One day that Maya will be gone and I will become God. So if we are God, what kind of God we are which get covered with Maya? Right? If it means Maya is superior than God. So jivas are by nature servant of the Lord. So in both the conditioned state and the liberated state, jiva always remain individual in its identity. So what does it mean? in the conditioned state or the liberated state. So right now we are in the conditioned state, and the goal of life is to get liberation from this conditioning and go back to the Supreme Lord. So even though one gets liberation, liberation doesn't mean merging into some impersonal thing and we lose our identity. After liberation also, the living entity maintains its individuality. So that is the next point. Liberation does not mean an impersonal merging, but the attainment of serving the Supreme Lord. Pure devotional service rendered to Guru and Lord Vishnu automatically grants liberation, release from the material bondage. There is no need of seeking only liberation. One need to seek only pure devotional service. So once one is completely engaged in devotional service, if somebody is not under the influence of the three modes of material nature, while living in this world also he is in a liberated state. We are in the conditioning state when we are under the influence of three modes, right? Rajoguna, Tamoguna, Sattvaguna. So when we are constantly under the influence of these three modes, that is the conditioning state. While living within this world, if somebody cut down the influence of these modes, he is within this body, within this world also, he is in a liberated state, always engaged in the service of the Lord. So the real method of acquiring knowledge is the combination of pratyaksha, logic and the Vedic authority. We cannot understand the Lord in its entirety by just based on the argument, by just logic. One can understand by pratyaksha praman, by anuman praman and shastra praman. So we have to go by all three, not by just speculation. So these are some of his core teachings, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has said he took two of his core principles. One is establishing the supremacy of the Lord. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Lord, and defeating the impersonal philosophy. And we will discuss what are, when we talk about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when we talk about the other principles also. So his Shiksha Ashtakam, there is a prayer composed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is called Shiksha Ashtakam. Ashtakam means eight prayers. So these eight prayers compose the eight principles basically, which is synchronized from all the four sampradayas. So we'll talk about that when we'll discuss about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So today we discussed about Madhvacharya. We'll stop here. If anybody has any question or want to add anything about Madhvacharya. So I just did very brief, some basic past, and there are many, many things about Madhvacharya. He was from childhood, as I said, he was a great scholar.
From beginning itself, we have like Madhvacharya, we have so many Acharyas. Still, why like other name and Christianity are more popular than ours?
Good question.
Because it's from beginning itself, we have all this thing.
So, the reason is with the influence of Kali Yuga, these teachings become getting lost and lost and lost, and very few people will follow the teachings to its completeness.
How those become like?
See, if you look at the history, our Vedic culture is always based on the strength of the scriptures, and it has not lost its essence, right? It's not has lost its value. The other cultures are not based on the strength or with the love of God. It's with the strength of the sword.
Strength
of the sword. When they convert people, it's not that they give a higher taste or higher values or higher understanding about God. It's by the force. By force they convert people. Oh, if you don't convert, either we'll kill you or that. But the Vedic philosophy is always establishing the principle of love of God. And love is never by force. And when people want to take shortcut, right, looking for an easy path or basic they don't want to follow all these rules and regulation and principle, and they get influenced with some other path showing, oh, this is easy way out to follow this. If somebody says, okay, you can do all nonsense, whatever you want to do, just follow what we are doing and you will attain the ultimate goal of life. So that's how people with less intelligence, they get bewildered. So that is the reason why Christianity and Islam, they have got more wide spread throughout the world now. There are a lot of disciples. So in Badrinath, this Badrinath Badrika Ashram is a very key place for the followers of Madhvacharya. Because as I said, Madhvacharya, it's considered that Madhvacharya is still living there, right, with Vyasadeva. So they have a very pilgrimage place of pilgrimage in Badrikanath for Madhva followers. He established 8 principal acharyas, Madhvacharya. I don't recall their names exactly. He put established 8 people and he for the in charge of his 8 different mutts who were very strong in preaching. So like Madhvacharya, we'll discuss about Madhvendra Puri, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the 6 Goswamis of Vrindavan. Some of the main, not all, but some main key players in the whole Acharya Sampradaya. Now, when we talk about this again, it's to get inspiration, right? To get inspiration to understand from their life how they develop so much love for God and how they preach vigorously, how they sacrifice their life to establish these principles for the benefit of humanity. So how we can take advantage, how we can take their blessings. In one way, when we talk about them, it's like we are seeking their blessings. So we can progress in our spiritual life. Right.
So we'll stop here.
Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Madhvacharya ki jai.